Episode 53 of the Gratic Sports Weekly Podcast is now live. Joined as always by the coach, Nick White, and Matt Skinner, our fearless leader. I am Billy Lindahl, and let me get this out of the way really quickly. The Gratic Sports Weekly Podcast is brought to you by Homemade Jellies by Cassie. Homemade jellies, preserves, and apple butter using your grandmother's famous recipes. Reach out to her on Facebook to make an order and be ready to order more. All of our customers are repeat customers. Also brought to you by Blake Ginger at Century 21 Novus. You can trust Blake with not only your home buying needs, but also if you're looking to sell, reach out to Blake at 678-664-1400 or 678-416-8268. Boys, how are we doing today?
Well, I'm excited to be back, first of all. Missed you guys. Yeah. Maybe not your faces, but your voices a little bit last week. I'm kidding. I did miss being on the show, but did listen to it. Very interesting topics that I would love to be able to be a part of this week. But I'm doing well. What about you guys?
I'm good. I know that yesterday the Hawks lost, unfortunately, got back to the 1-1 lead or a 1-1 tie. But that's right where we were with the Knicks, so I guess we can't complain about that. And the Braves are back to 500 and going to hopefully try to get over 500 for the first time this year. But we got a lot to talk about, and I know that Coach White definitely wants to jump in, Billy, because some of the stuff that myself and Matt Ridgway said about the dogs last week kind of rubbed him the wrong way. But big shout out to Blake Ginger and Century 21 and Cassie. If you haven't had the jellies, you're missing out. And if you haven't bought a home from Blake Ginger, you're missing out. Now's the time to do so.
And listen, and if money is an issue, I'm going to go ahead and tell you the jelly right now is a much better investment. I'm kidding. You can sell your home really well right now. But yeah, that jelly, it's good. And as our esteemed colleague Josh Engel just said, I don't think you're really ready for this jelly.
So it was actually Dave. But I'll take credit. Look, I'm used to taking credit for whatever he does.
You guys are cute in here. We just wanted to stop by.
It's just a raid. You know, we just wanted to come in and say that the Gratic Sports Podcast is second to none.
Second to none.
And their hosts are truly something spectacular.
They say Billy. I don't see Billy, though. Where's William? There he is.
Hey, brother.
Hey, buddy.
Yeah, I can't hear what attention to the man behind the curtain.
Yeah. Well, you boys have fun. We just wanted to stop by and say you're doing a fine job.
I hope you guys have so
much fun. Enjoy the fifth hour,
fine
boys.
And feel free to rate our podcast whenever.
Absolutely. You guys are cute.
Like
keep it
that.
Up.
We may have to do that maybe today. I don't know.
I like that beard, baby.
Thank you, sir.
They've got your boss in there today.
That's right. That's so. Right. The boss of bosses.
See,
the
Josh.
Boss of bosses.
Yeah. If you haven't listened to the Fifth Hour podcast, definitely do that on Spotify. And it's on the website, graticcommunications.com, underneath the podcast section. But, Billy, what are we going to start off with this week?
Well, we've got a big show today. We're going to talk Braves showing that they're not afraid of the world champs. The jet has officially flown out of Atlanta and landed in Tennessee. We've got dogs, news, and notes with Coach, and we have added new team members to the Gratic Sports family. But first, the Hawks, like Matt has said, continues to fly higher than we originally thought they could, and we're flying with them. Since we last spoke, the Hawks closed out the series in New York in dominant fashion and have moved to a 1-1 series tie heading back to Atlanta. Last night, the Hawks lost 118-102. Trae Young continues to be hot. He was kind of ice cold early on last night, but still ended up with 21 points last night. And it seems like Trae has truly embraced the underdog role that the Hawks have taken. And Coach, as a coach, that's something you, as a motivation, you kind of want somebody to take a role like that and push it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You can't make people want things. I'm a believer that people do what they want to do, and then they have passion with doing those things. And if they kind of take that mentality of it's us against the world, all that's going to do is make them more of a cohesive unit, okay? When you're out there and you're just kind of playing ball and everything is the same, you know, you may not have that type of team chemistry, but when you put that chip on your shoulder, and as a wrestling coach, we keep that chip on our shoulder because we just believe that, you know, we're always having to fight for everything. We have to fight for any recognition, and we got to fight, which is not the case, but we like carrying that chip on our shoulder, and it seems like the Hawks right now are enjoying carrying this chip on their shoulder of not being respected, not being, you know, with the name recognition. You know, maybe Trae really is upset about not being named an all-star this year.
And it's
showing, you know. And so I think as a coach, this is one of those intangible, invaluable weapons that the Hawks have right now is, look, nobody's expecting us to do anything. The only people that matter are the people within this circle, within our organization. We're going to go out and we're going to fight like you know what every single night to put our name in the paper, to put our name in lights, to make things happen. And listen, I've been super impressed. I told Matt this last week when I was on vacation. I said, look, I think the Hawks, I didn't think that they were hard-pressed to be able to pull out a few games in this series. And then they pull out the most important game is game one. That puts them in the driver's seat. Even 1-1 right now, everybody understands that the Hawks are in the driver's seat because you know where the next games are getting played.
Yeah, coming back home, and it had a very similar vibe to the Knicks series as well, because Shake Milton came in for the 76ers and scored 14 points, hit a bunch of threes, got the crowd back into it, and I was so impressed. The Hawks got down by 18 there in the first quarter. And the end of the first half, or during the first half, they got down by 18. That crowd was going crazy. And what did the Hawks do? They fought back, cut it to two. It actually got cut to one, and they even took the lead before the end of the third quarter, where Philly went on another big run and the crowd got back into it. And that's okay, because guys, the Hawks still don't have DeAndre Hunter. DeAndre Hunter did not play game one, and he did not play game two. And I cannot tell you how big of an impact he is, not only defending, but just giving another option out there to hit threes and to be a presence down low. Because as we saw, Joel Embiid has dominated early on. But I've been very impressed with this Hawks team. You know, Shake Milton, obviously, big time stuff from him. But we're coming back home, and the Hawks did what they had to do. They stole home court advantage. Let's see what they can do now.
And coming up in about 5 minutes, we're going to have a special guest join us. And this is – I'm so excited to talk to this guy. But first, I wanted to talk to Coach about this. Coach, I don't know if you saw this, but at the end of the game five of the Knicks series, Trae Young took a bow to the fans after hitting a dagger three and was asked about it afterwards. And his quote was, "I know where we are. I know there are a lot of shows in this city, and I know what they do when the show is over." Coach, what is your thoughts on this? Because I loved it.
I was going to say, this may surprise you. I thought it was awesome. I thought it was good. There's a time and a place, right? There is a time and a place. I'm not a fan of trash talking. I'm not a fan. I just go out there and play the game.
Right.
But the show was over. The curtains were closing. The fat lady had sung. And in a city whose fans are so interactive, they really are. They did spit on, right? I don't even want to go there. That guy should never be allowed back into a sporting event. And I don't mean like a Hawks game. I mean like a 5-year-old baseball game. That guy doesn't need to be there. But I digress. I've seen some crazy people at 5-year-old baseball games. Those people don't need to be there, do they, Billy?
Nope.
But as far as this is concerned, yeah, the lights were out. The party was over. I think it was a good – I don't know if I'd call it a signature moment in his career, but for now in his career, it is a signature moment. That's probably the biggest moment of Trae Young's NBA basketball career. Winning an NBA playoff series, right? Which he had not done. He played well in the series. He hit big shots when he needed to hit a big shot. I'm okay with it. Take a bow.
Everything he does is being compared to the guy that we originally drafted, Luka Doncic.
Right, right.
And by the way, did Luka win a playoff series?
No, he did not. Now, he looked pretty doggone good. He looked pretty good, but Kawhi was just a little bit better down the stretch.
That's not a surprise to a lot of people.
And that's
Kawhi Leonard is the man.
Exactly. And, you know, Trae Young is doing a lot right now, and he has had this Hawks team on his back, but I don't want this to go unnoticed. I mean, John Collins and Bogdan Bogdanovic and these guys have really stepped up because, you know, Trey's getting doubled now more and more, and these guys got to continue to hit the threes. How about Kevin Huerter last night? Kevin Huerter didn't miss a shot until the fourth quarter. He started off 8-for-8, and without him yesterday, we're not in that game at all. Without him, it's not even a game. And at least, you know, we were able to force them to play more minutes and Joel Embiid to play more minutes, because I don't know how in the world. He has a partially torn meniscus, and that joker has played, there's 48 minutes in an NBA game, and I think he's played like over almost 80 minutes. I don't know if that's exactly right or not, but I feel like he's played close to 80 minutes, high 70s, with a partially torn meniscus. So how much longer can he hold up? I was kind of disappointed with Clint Capela last night. I felt like defensively he was not giving his best effort against Joel Embiid, and I know he's given up 2 inches, and Joel Embiid is just a freak of nature. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to score. He's not going to not score.
Yeah.
You know, he's not going to have 4 or 5 games in a row where he's not going to go out there and ball. He's going to get his. What you have to do in a situation like that is you got to know that studs and ball players are going to produce. That's going to happen. What you have to do is withstand that storm, right? And in basketball, it's a series. It's not a one-game winner-take-all game. It's a series. You're not going to go out and sweep every series. Joel Embiid's going to have nights where it doesn't matter what happens. He's not going to be guardable.
Right.
He's that good of a scorer. And so he's going to have nights like that. What the Hawks have to do is say, okay, you got us tonight, but guess what? We're heading to ATL, right? We'll get you on the next one. You're going to be a little bit off. You know, things are going to be a little different. So you just got to withstand the point.
He played 35 minutes
and he's going to have to for them to win. Like, that's their guy.
38 you know? In the other in game one.
Okay, so there you go.
So he has played a total of 73 minutes.
Wow. Yeah.
And so only 23 minutes of game time has been played that Joel Embiid hasn't been on the floor.
And he had this same injury, the same exact injury on his other knee, his off knee. I mean, technically, his off knee, his right knee is a lot what he goes to more than anything. So on his off knee, he missed 4, I think he missed 6 weeks. The last time he had this same exact injury. So shout out to the Philadelphia doctors and all the cortisone shots that that man's getting, because that's the only way that he's being able to play through this. I've gained a lot of respect for Joel Embiid because he is definitely, without him these last 2 games, it wouldn't have even been close.
That's correct.
And give credit to Shake Milton coming off the bench and stepping up for Ben Simmons, because as we're finding out, Ben Simmons is not all that is cracked up to be.
Nope.
It is embarrassing. He shoots free throws like Shaquille O'Neal. It is embarrassing. You are a point guard in the NBA, and you're shooting like 48% from the free throw line in the playoffs. Absolutely embarrassing. Like, they had to take him off the court until the 2-minute mark so the Hawks couldn't foul him continuously. So credit Shake Milton, because without him, it could have been a completely different game last night.
And that being said, this is something we talked about last week, Matt, is the fact that, you know, when Travis Schlenk or when Lloyd Pierce was talked about getting fired, they talked about Travis Schlenk as well because of just how the team was underperforming. Well, now, if you think about the depth that the Hawks have right now, I mean, the Hawks bench outscoring in game one, 34-23 in the first game. The Hawks bench in game two in the first half, it was 32-0, the Hawks bench over Philly.
Right.
Which is unreal. The second half, obviously, with Shake Milton coming up and really stepping up in the second half, that helped. It was 17-26 for the Hawks. So that, but still that depth, you're still winning that. It was 49 points from the bench is really, really solid.
Yeah, if the bench can continue to play that well, you know, Solomon Hill was a real letdown. I think he was a minus 18. He played 9 minutes last night, and he was minus 18 when he was on the floor, I think is what he ended up being. So we really need DeAndre Hunter back. If DeAndre Hunter can get back on Friday, I mean, I really like the Hawks' chances. If they continue to shoot the ball the way that they have, I mean, because they played one of their worst games of this playoffs.
Right.
And they had a 1-point lead in the third quarter on the road against Philadelphia, the number one seed. So as bad as they played, they were still right there in it. And apparently Cam Reddish is close to coming back as well, hearing from Travis Schlenk. I know he's not probably going to add much offensively, but he's a guy that can cause problems on the defensive end with his wingspan and his speed. So,
and that's what you need right now.
And that's what you need. You've got plenty of offense. I mean, we scored 102 points last night on an off night. So the offense is there, but obviously defensive-wise, you're going to have to throw more double teams. You're going to have to draw more fouls because Joel Embiid, he's just a force of nature down there, man.
And why don't you ask Julius Randle if DeAndre Hunter was a force?
Yeah. Okay?
And see if that changes. Let's hope he can come back and get on Embiid. Let's get to our special guest right now.
We can't thank Marine South enough, and they are the guest hotline sponsor, and it's under new ownership. Clay and Lindsey Harden are proud to serve the West Georgia and East Alabama area with the best experience and customer service around. If you're looking to buy or service your boat for the summertime, let Marine South take care of you. Give them a call at 770-832-3000. 3330 or go visit them at 1656 North Highway 27 in Carrollton.
Joining us now on the Marine South Hotline is legendary voice of the Atlanta Hawks, Steve Holman. Steve, this team looks to be a completely different team since the Lloyd Pierce firing. They just need a different voice to push them to the next level?
Well, the Nate McMillan era has really been something to see, and it's been fun to watch. You know, we were 14-20 at that time when he took over, and since then the Hawks have had a phenomenal record, 32-12, I think it is now, since Nate McMillan took over. So it's been the tale of two seasons, that's for sure, and now it continues into the postseason, and looking forward to getting back to State Farm Arena Friday night and Monday night, and I hope the crowd is raucous like they were in Philadelphia, and we'll see what happens. Let it go and roll the ball out there and take our chances.
Yeah, and speaking of State Farm Arena, Steve, how has it been to try to call all these games from State Farm Arena, even the road games? I know that's got to be tough for you.
Yeah, it's been different. It's been a weird season, that's for sure, with all of the COVID stuff and the rules and not being able to travel. That's been the hardest part, really, is not being around the team on a regular basis, you know, not being on the plane, not being on the bus and, you know, in the hotel lobby to see guys. And, you know, it's all been through Zoom this year, so that's been tough. And the broadcasting part of it has been really strange because the road games we do from State Farm Arena from the control room with two big screens, and we get the direct feed from the NBA, you know, with all the sound effects and everything. But it's just not the same as being there. So, you know, hopefully, fingers crossed, by next season, everything's going to be back to normal. The NBA announced this morning they're going to go back to the Summer League again in Vegas in August. So that's back to normal again. So I think when we start the season again next year with the training camp October 1st and the start of the regular season, I think, is October 26th. So let's hope that everything's back to normal and, you know, we're back with the team and broadcasting from the various venues.
And I think things are getting back to normal. I know we're getting some legislation from Georgia High School Association in the near future, basically saying we're getting back to normal. But you have been able to see these Hawks in person at State Farm. What's been different? Obviously, we know that there's a coaching change, but what have you seen that has just kind of gelled the team to be able to pursue such a great record the second half of the season?
Well, I think that they you know, like it says on their warm-up jerseys during the playoffs, believe, and I'm pretty sure that's what it is. They believe in Nate McMillan. They respect him as a former player in the NBA for a long time and a 15-year head coach in the NBA. So I think they took notice to what he was saying, and he's really been a terrific leader. He's helped Trey mature quite a bit. He's convinced Trey to be the floor general, if you will, and, you know, distribute the ball, and he's been able to do that. He's been averaging 10 assists per game in the playoffs, and even though he had kind of a rough night with turnovers last night, everybody turned it over a lot last night for the Hawks. So I think that was one little bump in the road. I think the good news out of last night is, though, that Nate will get them ready for Friday and make the adjustments that he needs to. And I thought the terrific thing was that they were down by 18 right away in that game last night and were able to come back and actually took the lead in the third quarter by a point. So to do that against that 76ers team and the crowd in Philadelphia, you know, knowing that that team was the number one seed in the East, I thought that was a very encouraging sign. And if they can shoot the ball a little better on Friday, and I think the Hawks are more athletic than Philadelphia. I think we've seen that over the first two games. So I hope that they come out Friday like they are shot out of a cannon and run up and down and make the Sixers work a lot on defense. And I think everything's going to be okay.
Steve Holman, voice of the Atlanta Hawks and the Atlanta Hawks Radio Network, is joining us on the Gratic Sports Weekly Podcast and the Marine South Hotline. Steve, 2 points I've noticed. The Hawks have turned the ball over 17 and 18 times in the first two games, leading to more than 20 points each. And last night, it seemed like Philly took care of the ball more than they did in game one. And that was a major key to their victory last night, because game one, they turned it over, I think, 24 times. So I think going after the ball is got to be key for Atlanta to move on into game three and game four.
Yeah, and I think Philly only turned it over seven times all last night, so that was a big difference. And, you know, the Hawks came out and missed some shots early, and they got a little jittery. I thought Trey threw a few away early that he probably would like to have back. So they definitely have to clean that up for sure. They've got to figure out something to do with Joel Embiid, who had 39 the first game, 40 in last night's game. So, you know, they're going to have to figure that out. But he's so tough to stop. He has that little fadeaway jump shot, and it's almost impossible to defend that. So I think what they're going to try to do is go right at him, maybe make him work a lot harder on defense and see how that works out. But like I said, the Hawks are the more athletic team. I think we've seen that over the first two games. And if they can use their quickness and their depth and speed, I think they're going to be okay. You know, you go into Philly, you hope to be 1-1 when you come out of there, or any place you play in the first two games on the road. And I think if on, you know, Sunday morning before game one, if somebody said, you know, you're going to leave on Tuesday night with a split 1-1, I think everybody would have taken that and be very happy with it, because now they have the home court advantage. It's a five-game series, and three of those five games now are going to be in Atlanta.
And you mentioned this, the Hawks bench has been unreal right now. The depth of the Hawks are showing, and we mentioned this on the podcast a couple weeks back, but when Lloyd Pierce was getting fired, there was talk of Schlenk being let go as well, but the depth he's built for this team has been unreal. I mean, the first half yesterday, the bench was 32-0 against Philly.
Yeah, a lot of it took, you know, getting healthy again, and that's been a big part of it. You know, they've got everybody pretty much back now. DeAndre Hunter missed again last night. He's missed the first two games of the series, and, you know, they really need him badly on the defensive side, especially against this Philadelphia team. So, you know, I hope that he can come back by the weekend. He's got to have a couple extra days now to get rest on that thing, and he's got some knee soreness. So, you know, it's pretty much up to him at this point whether he can play or not. So hopefully he will. Maybe he'll take a cue from watching Joel Embiid play pretty much on one leg for two nights and score all those points. So, you know, I hope DeAndre is okay to play this weekend. But if he's not, you know, that's why we have the depth that we have on this team. And, you know, I think Nate's going to have to look at, you know, if he's going to continue to start Solomon Hill, because he got lit up by Tobias Harris last night early. And, you know, maybe I know he loves to have Kevin Huerter come off the bench for that offense and defense. But, you know, if DeAndre can't play this weekend, he may have to turn to Kevin back in the starting lineup.
Yeah, I think Solo was, what, minus 16 last night. Tough outing for Solo when he was on the floor for the Hawks. But you talked about DeAndre Hunter, Steve, and we talked about Joel Embiid. And, of course, if you listen to the national media, and I try not to do that, I try to keep it to 92.9 The Game when I can, because they give it to us straight more than the folks at ESPN and stuff. But a lot of people were saying, you know, Joel Embiid, there's no way he was playing in this series, and DeAndre Hunter was going to be a full go, but it's been the exact opposite here in the first two games. So what do you think DeAndre Hunter, if he is able to play, is going to be able to add to this team going forward on Friday?
Well, he's going to add so much on the defensive side. You know, I think he can come out and play somebody like Tobias Harris and pretty much shut him down and, you know, help out. He can really defend all five positions on the floor, which is the great thing about DeAndre. But, you know, if he can't go, he can't go. I mean, that's it's got to be his decision, I think, at this point. So hopefully he will be able to go, but he'll add so much. And on the offensive side, he started to find his stroke again, too. And, you know, he only played in 22 games all season during the regular season. So he kind of got it going a little bit against the Knicks there in that five-game series. And then all of a sudden he comes up with this knee soreness. So, you know, it's unfortunate, but maybe he'll be able to go this weekend.
Well, I completely agree with you when you were talking about leaving Philadelphia with the 1-1 split. I think we've kind of analyzed this series. We know what the Hawks need to do coming back to Atlanta. We need to handle business. But I also would like to change gears just a little bit, because I feel like we would be completely remiss to have you on our podcast and not talk to you a little bit about some of the historic calls and some of the things that you've done in your career with the Atlanta Hawks. And so I want to ask you a couple of questions about, obviously, you've been able to call games when Dominique Wilkins became the leading scorer for the Hawks, or Lenny Wilkins, you know, record-breaking win. Talk to us about some of your favorite calls as an Atlanta Hawk.
Well, you know, there have been so many. I mean, it's hard to, you know, pinpoint, but there have been a few. I mean, I think of course, the famous Dominique-Larry Bird series at 88. I especially liked, everybody talks about Game 7, but for me, the Game 5, the win in Boston, was my favorite game to call in that series, because we went in there 0-2 at the beginning, won the both games at home, and then went back to Boston, and nobody gave the Hawks a chance, and they kind of shocked the world and won that Game 5 and had an opportunity to wrap up that series in Game 6. Didn't happen. But that game five was a lot of fun. I thought the group with Al Horford and Zaza, when they went up against Boston, when they got back in the playoffs after a 9-year absence, they took them to the seventh game as the number eight seed against the number one. I thought that was a lot of fun. A couple of Chris Crawford three-pointers that he scored at the buzzer. Game winners were big. Buzzer beaters are very big, and you don't get many over the course of a season or really in a career. You don't get that many, but you know, I've been fortunate that we've had a few of them. You know, we've had some Dominique ones over the years. We had the Paul Millsap had a big one here, and you know, this year Tony Snell hits a three to win, and those are always fun. Those are fun things to do, and I think now that this group here might be the most fun that we've had in all of my 36 years watching these guys. You know, they're just kids, 22 years old, and Kongwu is 19. And, you know, even John Collins, who's the old vet on the team from 4 years ago when he came here, got drafted, is 24 years old. And so they're a lot of fun. And I've had a lot of fun calling the games with this group. And I think we're going to have a lot more fun before it's all over with.
Yeah, and one of my favorite groups was the Mookie Blaylock, Steve Smith years in the 90s.
Right, you're right.
Some of my favorite teams.
I didn't even mention them.
Right, well, and so I'm going to bring this up to you with the fame that The Last Dance has got. What was it like when that Chicago Bulls team came to town? Because I thought Atlanta had as good a shot as anybody during that time to unseat those guys, and obviously that didn't work out. But talk about what it was like to have Michael Jordan, the Chicago Bulls, coming into the Omni and playing that really good Hawks team.
Yeah, I mean, that was fun. I mean, we had a couple of times with that group with Mookie and Smitty. You remember one year we won the first game in Chicago, and I thought, you know, the Hawks had a great chance to win that series against Chicago, and, you know, it didn't happen. But, you know, they had some really good teams, the Hawks did, over the years. I mean, a lot of 50-win teams, but, you know, you run into Larry Bird first, and then you run into Michael Jordan, and, you know, only one team can win every year. So those were great teams, and Smitty, you know, was phenomenal to watch with his three-pointers. So, yeah, that was a fun group. And, of course, to be able to call Michael Jordan's games against the Hawks was always fun, especially when he returned after his first retirement and came into the Omni. He won it on a buzzer beater, took the ball up the floor and scored. And, you know, that was, you know, unfortunate for the Hawks, but it was very exciting to see Michael Jordan do that. And, you know, the crowd went crazy here. So it was a historical moment to call. It was fun.
Well, Steve, real quick, one more before we let you go. Anything you're looking forward to? Game three, get the fans back in the State Farm Arena and get them wilded out. Do you think the Hawks got a good chance to pull it out?
Yeah, I think they do. I think we're going to have a big edge there on Friday. You know, I think the place will be rocking, and you know, if people want to get tickets for that, it's hawks.com/playoffs. And I think it's going to be terrific. I mean, it was the fans were great against the Knicks. I think it's going to be just the same against Philadelphia on Friday and Monday. And I really do feel good about Friday. I think the Hawks can use their athleticism, like I said, and take advantage of that. And, you know, secondary players always seem to do better when they're at home in playoff games. And, you know, you look last night and see what happened with Shake Milton. I mean, who would have expected him to be the guy that turned that whole game around? But he did. So that's why at home, you know, guys always seem to do better. So that's why I think we're going to be in good shape.
Right. I think it was kind of deja vu from game two with New York with Alec Burks doing what he did to the Hawks. But nonetheless, Steve Holman, voice of the Atlanta Hawks. How many games in a row has it been, Steve?
27-27 as of last night.
27-27. Wow. And I tell you this right now, I think they're on ESPN Friday night. Don't listen to them. Turn down the volume and turn up Steve Holman, the voice of Atlanta Hawks basketball. Steve, thank you so much for joining us. And hopefully we can have you on when we get to the Eastern Conference Finals and probably face the Brooklyn Nets.
Yes, sir. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Anytime you need me, just call.
Thank you, sir. Have a great day. Our thanks to Steve Holman. They don't make him any better, folks. And I'm telling you, he is as Homer as they get. So if you love good old-fashioned Homer broadcast, Steve Holman is the man to listen to. 2,727 straight games for Steve. But we can't thank Marine South enough, and they are the guest hotline sponsor. And it's under new ownership. Clay and Lindsey Harden are proud to serve the West Georgia and East Alabama area with the best experience and customer service around. If you're looking to buy or service your boat for the summertime, let Marine South take care of you. Give them a call at 770-832-3330 or go visit them at 1656 North Highway 27 in Carrollton.
Our thanks to our special guest, legendary voice of the Hawks, Steve Holman, for joining us.
Real quick, they don't make him any better than Steve Holman. Not many times can you say a man has not missed a Hawks game since the 80s.
Which is, I mean, and he's seen some stuff. He has seen some ball players. I mean, because you would talk about, and again, I know we talk about it a little bit in the interview, but some of the talent that that guy has seen come through the Omni, right? That was, by the way, Matt, that was where the Hawks used to play.
The human highlight factor.
Yeah, that's where the Hawks used to play. You know, with not just with Dominique Wilkins, obviously, and guys like Tree Rollins, but like the talent from the 80s in basketball and 90s in basketball.
Remind me to tell you my Tree Rollins story.
We'll make that happen.
Okay.
I feel like it could be a good time for the Tree Rollins story. Is this an honor?
Well, it's actually my dad's story, and it probably needs to stay off air.
Okay. Well, there you go. Sorry. You'll have to ask him in person. That's a tease.
What we got with the Braves, though, Billy? They finally decided to get to 500, and hopefully they can get over the hump coming up here against Philadelphia. Good win for them last night.
Yeah, they're 4-2 since the podcast last week, and that's big considering they had to go against the world champs, and basically they went up against the world champs and said, "We're not afraid of you." They fought and scrapped and ended up with two wins. If you really think about it, the Braves just went and took Kershaw, which Kershaw before this weekend had never lost to the Braves
in the regular season. Ever. Yeah. In the regular season. Yeah. 15-0 overall.
And now it's 15-1.
Yes, sir.
The Braves ended up winning on Saturday, and then they went up against last year's Cy Young winner, Trevor Bauer, and beat Trevor Bauer. So, that was a big series for the Braves, and I think it might be a turning point for them. If they can just continue to keep scrapping, I mean, you're talking about some of these names that you weren't really prepared for to be starting with Almonte and
Guillermo Heredia.
I mean, these guys weren't really who you guys planned to have in the starting lineup, and these guys are who you are.
Real quick, you were embarrassed on Friday night. I mean, you were embarrassed. You were playing really well. You were up, and then you give up 8 runs in an inning, and you have 3 errors, and you walk 3 guys.
Yeah,
you cannot do that against the world champs. And I got to credit the Braves a little bit. I was very disappointed in that game Friday night. But a lot of teams, you have that kind of performance, it runs over into the next day.
Especially if you're playing the same team.
Yes. And Clayton Kershaw, who all you've heard is, oh, man, never beat this guy in the regular season. They've never had a start where we've beat him in the regular season. And what do? They come out, Guillermo Heredia, William Contreras, they have big hits. And these are kids that, like you said before the season, we weren't expecting any of this. We weren't expecting the Marcelo Ozuna stuff. I mean, we weren't expecting Travis d'Arnaud to sprain his finger and be out on the 60-day IL. And these kids are stepping up. And I say kids, but Guillermo Heredia is 30. And I really like him. You know, Marcelo Ozuna really had the whole mix-it-up thing last year and obviously can't do that anymore. So what does Guillermo Heredia do? He kind of has been the voice in the dugout. If you ever see him in the dugout, he is the new, like, Marcelo Ozuna. He's got the new dances, and, you know, when they get on base, he's making sure the dugout's hype. So he's going to be a guy that, you know, everybody keeps talking about the Braves trying to make a move. Maybe they need to make a move, but I think he's your center fielder or left fielder until, you know, at least next year. Because of what he has meant to this team. Yeah, he might not go out and hit you 20 home runs, but you don't mess with chemistry of baseball teams. And he seems to have gotten it going. He had a big hit last night. But I was very impressed with the Braves, Coach, because they could have, like we just said, rolled over, and they could have got swept, and they could have been in a whole, you know, 5-6 games under 500. Now they're back at 500.
Right. And the key about them being at 500 right now is not, oh, man, they're 500. It's that only one other team in the division is above 500.
And they lost to the Orioles last night.
So that's a big deal. So as good, bad, and ugly as the Braves have been this year,
yeah,
the NL East has been the same.
Yep.
Like, you know, the Mets are five games over, but the Mets still have some games that they're going to have to make up, and they're going to be, you know, going to be mashed into the schedule.
And they've got some injuries,
right?
Too.
And that's going to mount up for those guys. And so the big thing about being 500 is, I don't know how else to say it, the rest of the NL East just ain't getting it done.
No.
Nobody in the NL East has separated themselves, including the Mets. So that's the big thing about them being 500. Yes, the game against Kershaw, that's huge. It's a confidence builder. I think it's important that young guys are allowed to run, and they got that juice. That's not fake juice. That's real energy that these – and we call them young. I know they're 30, but they're getting their chance. You know what I'm saying? They're young to the organization as starters. How about that? And so I think that is a big thing, to let those guys kind of go and carve their own way, because this Braves team does not look like last year's Braves team. The pieces aren't there. You know, whether it's Ozuna, whether it's the pitching staff, they're just not there. So they're going to have to find other ways to win baseball games, and they've done that a lot better, recently. 5-5 in their last 10, but like Billy said, I believe he said 4-2 since the podcast last week. So obviously they're picking things up, and Billy said this, and he's 100% correct. They just got to keep scrapping. Just keep yourself in the fight. Keep yourself close enough to where you can get your tail in the playoffs. Now, what they're probably going to have to do to get it, they probably need to overtake the Mets. They probably need to go ahead. Let's just go ahead and win the division, fellas. Let's not play the other game. Let's win the division.
Well, you're really, if the season ended today, you would have to win the division because of how
bad the NL East is.
And how good the NL West is.
Well, the Giants. Oh, my gosh.
The Giants.
Yes.
Who would have thought the Giants would have been in first
Padres
place right now?
And Dodgers are all sitting almost at 600 as far as their records are concerned.
Yeah.
Which is super. And the Giants are at 633.
Yeah.
That's super impressive.
By the way, do you think the Phillies are really ticked off considering that their manager, who sucked the past couple of years in Philly, has gone to San Francisco and completely turned that team around?
Completely redeemed yourself.
Well, I'm telling you what, baseball is a weird sport, guys. I mean, it is just a very weird sport. And we have come to find out, like, it doesn't matter how much talent you have. I mean, if you have injuries and if you don't throw strikes and you don't have timely hitting, it doesn't matter.
That's right.
It honestly doesn't matter. Right. You can have the best team ever assembled. If you don't have timely hitting and you don't have a guy throwing strikes out there, it does not matter.
That's it.
I mean, just look at the AL East as another with the Yankees. I mean, they've got all the money and all the talent in the world, and they're not in first place. I mean, the Rays, I think, are in first place. And I know that they've been a traditional power the last couple of years, but Gerrit Cole makes more than their entire starting lineup does. So baseball is just a weird sport. And especially right now, we're finding out that it's about who's hot and who's throwing strikes. And right now, the Braves are doing a decent job of that.
Keep chopping,
well,
baby.
Let's talk about that real quick. Drew Smyly had another meh outing. Giving up another home run, not making it past the fifth inning.
He's so good the first two times through the order. And then when he gets to the third time of the order, it's like, oh, man, it's not like I've never seen these guys before or something. It's so weird.
Shane Green got into the game last night and gave up three hits, two now, home runs.
I will say this.
In just an inning, or like a third of an inning.
I will say this. Awful. I will say this, Billy. He kind of got screwed a little bit. And Tom Glavine and Chip Carey mentioned it too. And I even saw on Twitter last night the home plate umpires, they give him a scorecard. They missed two calls in that Shane Green at bat. He should have struck out JT Realmuto. But he got the count to 3-2 and hit a home run. I'm not making excuses, but Shane Green did not pitch as bad as his box score and stat line looked. And good thing the rest of the bullpen bailed him out last night. You know, Newcomb came in, and Newcomb, the last time he pitched, he walked three straight guys against the Dodgers. And what did he do last night in a big situation? He kept the game close. And Tyler Matzek got out of the bases loaded jam. Not the best of starts for Shane Green, but the good thing the rest of the bullpen picked him up last night.
Tucker Davidson is getting another shot tonight. The last time out, he pitched really well. 5 1/3 innings of one-hit ball. And let's go get him, kid. I mean, he's one of those pitchers that I'm kind of excited about just because of his repertoire, his speed, his fastball. Is just, he can dot all over the strike zone, and that's something you really need. You need to be able to pinpoint where these balls go. And I think Tucker Davidson does that.
Well, and he's not giving up a lot of runs.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. He's, I mean, I know he hasn't pitched a ton of innings, but he's only given up six hits and three runs in 11 and two-thirds innings.
He had five walks his last outing, which obviously not the best, but he only gave up, I think, two hits. So. That's
it. You don't want walks.
The most important
thing you don't want is runs.
Runs, exactly. Hey,
you keep the runs off the board, that's fine, you know.
I do want to pose a question to you both before we get off the Braves, and I know Coach is ready to talk Georgia football. I can see it in his eyes over there. But Billy and Coach, you know, obviously the trade rumor mill is running high. I think the Braves do need to go, obviously, make a move for a David Peralta, a Ketel Marte. I've even heard Charlie Blackman's name out there from the Rockies. I would love to see that. I think
I think those are
guys that you can afford and you can go get. I would not mind trying, and I know he hasn't had a good year, but I know Drew Smyly, you know, we signed him for a $13 million, I think is what it is, Billy.
$11 million
for just the 1 year, I think. I wouldn't, if somebody would want to eat that contract, you know, what's the difference right now between Bryce Wilson or Kyle Wright or Tucker Davidson going out there pitching every fourth or fifth day for a minimum contract when you have Drew Smyly, who's actually pitching worse than all three of them? Give the young guys a chance.
Absolutely.
They're not going to do as bad, or they're doing about the same as your $11 million guy and Drew Smyly. I know that Drew Smyly is a veteran, and he's a guy that you expect to go out there and try to give you six, seven innings, but he's not getting the job done. And if we can get somebody to eat that contract, I think he's a guy that we can try to trade as a possible piece back, but I know nobody's going to want to pay $5, $6 million for half a season, which is the only bad thing. So I think we're stuck with that, but what do you guys think about trying to go get a corner outfielder like a Charlie Blackman, Ketel Marte, David Peralta? Because we obviously have plenty of pieces to trade for, trade with.
I'll let Billy answer that piece. I'm gonna talk about the pitching piece. I mean, it's basic coaching principles that if things are all together the same, you want the youth, right?
Exactly.
And if you're talking about Major League Baseball, if things are all together the same, you want the youth and the smaller contract. You know, I mean, that makes good financial sense.
Bryce Wilson has pitched really well.
Exactly. They've all done, like you said, they're about the same, but these guys have a higher upside at this point because they have...
Nobody wants a 32-year-old left-hander that's had elbow injuries.
Exactly. So, I mean, as far as me and as far as I'm concerned, I say go with the youth, go with the young guys, go with the smaller contracts, because the worst thing that can happen is they pitch as poorly as the older gentleman on the team. So, as far as that's concerned, I'm 100% with you on the youth. Now, the other question, I'll let you have that, Billy.
Well, the outfield, I mean, right now, like you mentioned, Matt, I mean, with Guillermo Heredia doing pretty well in center, and we can move him over to left once Pache actually gets his head right and starts hitting pitching again in AAA.
Right.
If it's working right now, why mess up with it? And they're scrapping together good at bats, and that's what you need, especially from the those guys are going to be bottom of the lineup people. It's not going to really affect us that much. And to go back to a point that I was going to make, our middle infielders have been hot. I mean, Ozzy Albies has raised his batting average almost 40 points in the last 2 weeks. Dansby has raised his almost 30 in the same amount of time.
And let's not forget about the NL Player of the Week, Austin Riley, who put the Braves back in
another
front
homer.
Last night. Another big homer. Was a triple shy of the cycle. And the reason I put this out there, and I agree with you, Billy. I'm right there with you. But at the same time, we had Marcelo Ozuna, the guy that was third in the MVP race, or fourth in the MVP race last year, the guy that protected Freddie Freeman and protected Ronald Acuna. You could not pitch around them because you knew you had Marcelo Ozuna coming up. Now with the Braves lineup, yes, Ozzy Albies has been hot right now, but that joker can be as cold as ice and swing at everything, and so has Dansby Swanson. So, yes, they're hot right now, but what says we can't go and get a David Peralta who we know can hit 15, 20 home runs and give you an extra power piece? Because we were expecting Guillermo Heredia and Almonte and these guys to be coming off the bench and supplying big-time pitch hits, pitch hitting, and now you're relying a lot on Ender and Ciarte off the bench, which is definitely not what you want, in my opinion.
And Charlie Blackman is hitting .395 in the past 30 games.
There you go.
But that's neither here nor there. Yeah. When we come back, we're going to discuss the Falcons moving on from the franchise's best wide receiver. And Coach has been chomping at the bit to talk to Dog. So we'll come back right after this.
Hey, everybody, this is David Brock from the David Brock Morning Show on B92 Country. We want to invite you to join us every Monday through Friday on B92 for the David Brock Morning Show. All the news, info, weather, and whatnot to get you going. Plus, you know we're going to crank those tunes up to get your day started right. You can find us B92, that's 92.1 on your dial. Tune in app by typing in WBTR in the call letters, or B92Country.com, streaming 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, wherever you are. Come join us. It's the David Brock Morning Show on B92 Country.
All right, boys. News broke Sunday, I think. Julio Jones has been traded to the Tennessee Titans for a second rounder in 2022, a fourth rounder in 2023, and the Titans also received the Falcons' sixth round pick in 2023.
We can't have anything nice. The Hawks get a big win. The Braves get a big win over the Dodgers. And then, we trade our franchise wide receiver, everybody's favorite player. It's not what you know. It's Julio. And I love Julio Jones. I love what he's embodied with the Atlanta community. He's been a great piece. He's never had any issues. The only issue he ever had was losing his earring in Lake Lanier, as far as I know.
Which is really, when Lake Lanier is considered, that's probably your best way out.
Exactly. So, you know, everybody that's trying to find excuses of, you know, Julio Jones, you know, not being good anymore, and, we needed to make this trade. Yeah, maybe we needed to for down the road, but it's a big loss. It's a big loss because when Julio's out there, even if he's not 100%, he draws double teams. He draws and helps other guys around him be better. And same thing with Matt Ryan. Gives him a safety blanket, per se. But I know that I feel like that we had to get rid of him. I know we're taking $7 million in the cut in the cap right now. And I know $7.5 million, it sucks. I would have just sucked it up and kept him. And, you know, hopefully, you know, all we got is a second round pick and a third round pick out of it. And we actually gave back a sixth round pick. So, you know, the value's definitely not there after Dimitroff gave up everything in the world to get Julio. But Coach, you got any thoughts? I mean, I love Julio. I don't want to say anything bad about him. I know he's been off the field, not been able to play more with injuries of late, and that's an argument you can make. And unless he goes out and only plays half the games next year, I think that, you know, it's kind of a bad deal for us.
Well, you may think that both of you may tell me I'm just disconnected from the NFL game, but I like the trade if it was made a year or two ago, because to get a second round pick for Julio Jones is to me, that's not good value. Like you said, that's not a good valued trade. Now, it does make cap space. But again, if this happens a year ago before another season with some nagging injuries, your value is not going to be a second round draft pick. You know, our perception of Julio Jones is, hey, when he's on the field, you better have two guys on him, da-da-da-da. Obviously, the perception of the rest of the league is, I'll give you a second-round draft pick for the guy. That's not high enough value for me for what we consider.
And that was the best deal because the Seahawks, the Giants, so I mean, all kinds of teams
the issue. That's
out.
The perceived value. And so we've let go of a franchise player for a second-round draft pick. I think the value's wrong. I think if you were going to do it, you should have done it a year or two ago to make sure that guy is going to get you what you want in return. But to me, a second-round draft pick is not what I want in return for – you know, the best wide receiver in Falcons history, right? And again, I'm not a Falcons fan. I don't like the trade just because of the return. I do like the fact that you needed to offload some pieces. Personally, for me, as just looking at it as an outsider, I would have rather offloaded the quarterback and maybe brought one of these new quarterbacks in this year from this particular draft class. But that's neither here nor there. You didn't do that. You held on to that cap space with Matt Ryan. And so you get rid of Julio, who to me is the better half of that deal. I know he's not a quarterback. Quarterback's most valued position. Da, da, da. We can dispute all of those things and argue. But at the end of the day, you got a second-round draft pick for Julio Jones. I think that's just not good enough. Might as well. I'm going to agree with you, Matt. You should have hung on to him at this point in time and let him retire as a Falcon. I know you got to make cap space, but second-round draft pick is not high enough value.
Well, I know this. Nobody ever better wear a number 11 again for the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah, that's a decision the folks up front will have to make.
Well, maybe for the next couple of years, but that jersey needs to be retired. All that he did, especially the 2016 season alone and the 2012 season alone, What he did was plenty for me. If Roddy White can have it retired, you know, same with Julio.
I don't disagree with that.
And I know that it stinks, you know, for Falcons fans seeing him go. But when the Falcons drafted Kyle Pitts, I mean, that was kind of a slap in the face to Julio, was it not? I mean, I would have kind of taken it that way.
Well,
because
for me, I thought it was a great complimentary piece because he is officially a tight end, even though he's going to line up outside now. Obviously,
right,
with the departure of Jones, he will play that outside guy, and he'll be the next quote unquote Julio. At least that's what they'll look for him to be. But for me, the reason I wanted him to be drafted for the Falcons is because he enhances the offense. We're talking about needing three more points a game to potentially be in the Super Bowl. And then now you've offloaded, you pick up Pitts, but now you've offloaded Julio Jones. It just, to me, it doesn't make sense as far as winning this year.
Who, I want to throw this at you. With the Titans, they have a running game. They have the best running game. They have the best offensive line with Derrick Henry.
Yes.
They got A.J. Brown. Is Ryan Tannehill better than Matt Ryan, though? I don't think so, personally.
No.
And I know I'm biased.
No.
I know I'm biased,
I'm
but I don't think Ryan Tannehill's that good of a quarterback.
I am the opposite. I am opposite of bias of Matt Ryan. But, no, he is better than Tannehill. I think so.
Tannehill,
yes. Yeah. Yeah. But, however, Tannehill was a South Carolina quarterback from the 90s. I can't do the Tannehill thing. It's Tannehill. But anyways, that's his name. He had a mullet, too. You can look him up. You're welcome, guys. Steve Tannehill was the guy's name. But anyways, I don't think he's better, but does he have to be? Because you got a catch radius that's super wide with Julio Jones. You've got a catch radius that's super wide with Brown. You don't have to be great. You don't have to drop dimes. You got to get it close. You can't throw interceptions. And then worst case scenario, you turn around, you hand it off to your 230-pound running back, right? I think right now I like the way their offense sets up personally, the Titans.
Well, something to consider, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago, but what now at wide receiver for – look at the wide receiver room for the Falcons.
Tajay Sharp, baby. Tajay Sharp. We got that Tennessee Titan.
You got Ridley. And
you got Ridley.
Ridley's a legitimate number one.
Yeah.
He's a legit number one wide receiver in the NFL.
Yes.
You've got Pitts, who is going to have to.
Wide receiver.
He's going to. Well, it looks like he's going to be one now. you know, but I don't know who else you bring in at this point because you're not going to bring in another 6'3", 6'4", rangy guy, I don't think, unless he's just
still
a diamond in the rough.
We still have Treadwell, don't we? Laquan Treadwell?
No.
Oh.
No, we do not. Here's the names in the wide receiver room right now. Christian Blake,
ugh.
Russell Gage,
ugh.
Greg Dortch,
ugh.
Ozakias, Cordero Patterson.
Alamide Zacchaeus.
Cordell
Patterson's going to play running back.
Well, maybe.
Frank Darby, Antonio Nunn.
Might get another position switch here.
I mean, guys, these are who we're going to be running out at wide receiver. So that's just my issue right now.
Well, I mean, it's not your issue. It's not my issue. It's the Falcons' issue.
Yeah.
That's the Falcons' issue. They got to have somebody that lines up out there that can catch a football that your wagon hitched quarterback can throw it to. You know, I mean, you got to have somebody out there that's going to make Matt Ryan profitable for the Atlanta Falcons.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, let's get to the dogs. I know Coach has been chomping at the bit about this after hearing what Matt Ridgeway had to say last week about the dogs, about our transfers. We've also had
Mark Rick 2.0.
two 5-star prospects decommit in the past week, too. So that's something to throw out there as well.
Yeah, Deion Bowie from Bainbridge and Bear Alexander.
And that's the big one is Bear, and they decommitted after their visit. So I'm sure we'll get some details in that. I know there was another big defensive tackle Georgia spent a lot of time with during those visits as well. But as far as recruiting goes right now, I will not be concerned with what's going on in Georgia recruiting. And this is kind of what I wanted to get to last week when I was listening to you guys talk. I just felt like it was a little short-sighted and lazy. And I know that seems offensive, but I'm not being offensive to compare Kirby Smart to Mark Richt 2.0 because nothing could be further from the truth. And as Billy didn't even know it, but he was setting it up with the recruiting thing. Georgia lands more recruits right now than ever before in history. I know going into 2020, so 2 years ago, Kirby Smart had landed 19 in his first 4 years at the helm for Georgia. Mark Richt didn't do that in his career at Georgia, okay? Just to put things into perspective from a recruiting standpoint, if Kirby Smart never wins a national title, he's not Mark Richt 2.0. Okay, and then the other thing I want to get out is here's what a lot of young dog fans don't understand. You know who the coach was before Mark Richt?
Jim Donnan.
No. Well, yeah, it was, technically. And do you know who it was before Jim Donnan?
Vince Dooley.
No. Well, it was... You got this.
Wally Butts.
No, that was way back in the day. That's World War II stuff, man. It was Ray Goff.
Ray Goff. Ray Goff. Ray Goff.
And so
everybody
as someone
about the Ray
that
Goff.
Grew up with Ray Goff and then Jim Donnan, who actually, you know, Jim Donnan elevated the program. He went from, you know, we weren't really getting a lot of recruits. Jim Donnan got some recruits.
Well, that 2001, 2002 was a lot of Jim Donnan.
Was Jim Donnan's players, yeah. Yes. Especially the offensive linemen. That's one thing I felt like Mark Richt did not recruit very well when he was at Georgia was offensive linemen. After that first group, we struggled on the offensive line. But Mark Richt elevated the program. Georgia right. went from winning 6, 7, 8 ball games a year to where if they won less than 10, it was a problem. So he elevated the program. Kirby Smart has elevated the program exponentially. There's more talent that has walked and ran on that field in Athens than has ever been before. Ever before. Even during the Vince Dooley years, there has been more talent go through Athens than ever before. Not only that, there was an indoor athletic facility that Mark Richt tried to get for a very long time. Didn't get it. Guess who did? Kirby Smart made that happen. Kirby Smart just unveiled another $80 million project for coaches' offices and everything else. The lights, all those things that are happening at the University of Georgia what's happening at the University of Georgia is a top five program in the nation right now. That's what's happening. Now, they haven't won a national title, but the things they are doing are on par with Alabama. They're above right now what USC is doing. Okay, they're on par with Clemson and Ohio State. What they're doing is on par with the top programs in the country year in and year out. Unfortunately, what Mark Richt was doing wasn't. Mark Richt was a great coach for the 80s and 90s, where you didn't have to keep up with the Joneses, and you didn't have to have Twitter profiles, and you didn't have to have LED lights at home. He was just a good, solid football coach.
And just keep
up with kids getting arrested.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing for me. How many times do we have people suspended the first two games of the season with Mark Richt because they were spending time in the Clark County Athens jail?
That's it. And so things have changed under he's elevated the program. And so for me, I think it's just a lazy accusation more because he hasn't won a national title. There's a lot of coaches that haven't won a national title. And obviously that's what we're chasing at Georgia. I'm not trying to say that, you know, well, it's not that big a deal. No, it's a huge deal. We fired a very solid football coach to bring in someone that's going to win a national championship.
A guy that averaged 10 wins a year.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I was very afraid we were going to be in a Philip Fulmer situation to where you fire a great football coach and then things just go downhill. And Tennessee is still suffering from that decision, by the way. And I'd be okay if they kept doing that. But we're very blessed to not have downgraded. And he's doing tremendous things, again, that no other coach in the history of the University of Georgia has ever done. And so that was the main thing that had kind of bothered me from what you guys were talking about last week, because it's just not the case. It's apples and oranges. As far as number of wins and those black and white pieces, yeah, you make that argument. But for where the program is right now, it's light years ahead of where it was. Not only that, I mean, Chas Chambliss is on the roster. You got to be excited about that as far as news and notes and recruiting is concerned. But that was my big thing, is to make sure that people need to understand that, no, Georgia hasn't won a national title. I felt like they should have won one. That with Nick Chubb and Sony Michel and second and 26, which is one of the most painful memories ever as a Georgia fan. They probably should have pulled that game out. They didn't keep the gas going there in the second half, all that good stuff. You can make conversations about his game day prowess. But as far as recruiting, as far as creating an atmosphere as a top five program in the country right now, he's done that. I'm a believer in Kirby. I hope he wins a national title. But I do feel like Georgia has made its bed to saying, if you don't, very, very soon, we will move on. Like, I feel like when you fired Mark Richt, you basically said, it's national title or bust. So I completely and totally agree with that sentiment that you guys had last week, that it is national title or bust. Georgia has to make that happen. And especially this season, bringing in some of the transfers that they got, obviously, because the one big hole for Georgia for me was the secondary. Georgia's got three secondary transfers now that are solid players. And so now, obviously, they've got to come in. They got to
gel together.
They got to understand the communication piece and what the calls are going to be. And that's a full summertime of work that I hope that they're putting in there on their own. But, yeah, I do agree with that sentiment that it's national title or bust. Completely disagree with anything that could suggest that he is a second version of Mark Richt.
Well, let's get to the other big news that came out Monday. And I'll speak for Matt, because Matt will always be very, very humble about this. Matt pulled off a coup, Coach.
That's what he does.
A coup.
Matt was able to bring in Tom Arquezo and Josh Stitcher and bring that, and they are going to be our 98-9 team along with Verlin Best. How awesome is this? I mean, Coach, we got a chance to sit down and chat with Tom Arquezo on podcast a few weeks ago, over a month ago now. And having his wealth of knowledge in the West Georgia area is just, it's unmatched. And we're just building it. I sent Matt a text the other day. I said, we're building a franchise here, man. Like we're building a kingdom, and I'm here for it.
Well, you know, what Mr. Graddick and Mr. Skinner over here do is absolutely and totally as impressive as anything could be for local radio. And bringing in Arquezo it's local radio. You know, bringing in one of these guys that are, you know, just a consummate professional play-by-play. Now you're bringing in a local guy, like you said, that has a wealth of knowledge, and he is West Georgia, right? He is the flavor of West Georgia. And so you're bringing in someone that understands the area, that understands the programs in the area, and that speaks the same language that the people in the area speak. And so I think that is just completely invaluable. I'm super excited to listen to him on Friday nights from the bunker up here when we get back from wherever we're going to be. And so, and I've known Tom for a long time as well. And so I'm super excited. I think it's a big win for Graddick. I think it's a big win for Tom as well to be back here at Graddick Communications. So I'm looking forward to it. But you hit the nail on the head, Billy. It's a great addition and well done by Mr. Graddick and Mr. Skinner.
I'll put it in a couple of words from one of the more underrated musical groups of all time, I think, the Carpenters. Okay. You like the Carpenters?
I mean, I know the Carpenters.
I think they have one of the best Christmas albums of all time. I'm just throwing that out there. And I'm getting looks across the way from David Brock. He's like, why are you talking about the Carpenters on your podcast? He literally heard me through the glass. But they have a little saying. It's like, we've only just begun.
Yes, sir. Let's do it. Let's build this kingdom.
So there's plenty of things, and this is just the tip of the iceberg. And I'm telling you, boys, right now, it is a big iceberg. And I'll leave it at that. But I'm happy to have Josh and Tom on the team.
Two really quick items that I haven't prepped you guys for. I want your quick response. Over the weekend, John Rahm on the PGA Tour tested positive after finishing his third round and being up six strokes in the tournament. And they haven't had a back-to-back Memorial Tournament winner since, I think, Tiger. And Rahm was well on his way to do that. So how devastating do you think not only is it for him to get pulled out like that, but also how devastating is it to his wallet? Because that's probably easy at $2.5 million.
Yeah. The wallet part, obviously it stinks, but I mean, he's still got plenty of money to fall back on. And surely does he not finish or does he, I don't know how it works. He should get paid something because he finished three rounds. And his score should just be nullified from there. In my opinion, with COVID, but it is what it is. And I think the way that they did it was completely wrong. They told him while he was in the middle of his press conference, what they should have done is told him off his press conference, because I think that they were just trying to cause more issues that way. I mean,
yep.
I think we all kind of know my opinions and Coach White's opinions when it comes to the COVID stuff. Yes, it's a serious thing. Yes, people died and stuff, but he was asymptomatic. He never had showed any signs of anything whatsoever. I mean, and I understand the PGA Tour's rules, like you don't get tested if you're vaccinated, whatever, but still.
Well, it's not like it's wrestling. He doesn't need to lay on top of somebody. How many people does it take to play golf?
He can carry his own bag and play his own, yeah.
Takes one guy to play golf. You don't have to infect anybody with your craziness at this point, right? Like, at this point in time, it is common sense. If the guy wants to play golf, let him take his bag out onto the grass in the open area and everybody just mask up and spray Windex, Clorox, whatever it is you want. Just keep on spraying, okay? Everybody go hide in your tents and let the guy go play around golf. I mean, good gracious.
That's
I understand, Billy wanted to hear. Submitting to people's, you know, if you're going into a store and they say, hey, wear a mask, put on a daggum mask. I get that. But God almighty, at some point in time, liberty matters, people. Liberty matters.
Now, if he would have been sniffing and coughing and all kinds of stuff, sure, whatever. But the fact that he was, he literally was fine. Like, he had no issues whatsoever. And apparently, I think he already had COVID once.
And if you're stressed about it, get the vaccine and put a mask on. Save yourself.
The other thing that happened this weekend, and I definitely didn't, I kept up with it, but I didn't pay for it. The Floyd Mayweather Jake Paul match.
Oh, what a bum. That was just.
From the highlights that I saw, there was a point where Mayweather was just trying to make his money.
Yep.
And there was a moment where he literally punched Jake Paul out. And,
yep. And held him up. And held him up.
He fell into Mayweather's arms and he held him up just to just to keep going.
Because yeah, this is where the term carry somebody comes from. He literally carried that bum to an extra zero in the paycheck. Jeez. And people paid for this.
I didn't.
Yeah, not me.
Hey, I watched the stream on Peavy. Some random Twitter.
Coach Peavy was so angry about that. He was all over Twitter about it.
That's on you, Coach. That's on you. That's just a bad investment.
Did Coach
Peavy
buy it?
He bought the fight.
No.
88 Gamecock bought the fight and was not happy with it. Listen.
What did he expect?
Yeah, this is not. I'm not second guessing you, Coach. This is a first guess. I love you. All right. This is the first guess.
That was dumb. You wasted, $59.99? How much did it cost for the
fight?
Look,
dude, get Jackie P to show you how to get on Twitter and watch this thing, you know, like Matt Skinner did.
Yeah.
Matt Skinner watched it, didn't pay for it. We'll talk, Coach. Me and you, we'll talk off air.
We need to talk to him.
$49.95. He paid $49.95 for the
fight. Good gracious in heaven.
Coach PB, you better than that, baby. You better than that. I love you,
Coach.
Well,
that's it for episode 53 of the Grindhack Sports Weekly Podcast. Our special thanks to Steve Holman, the legendary voice of the Atlanta Hawks. Also, our thanks to David Brock and Josh Engel of the Fifth Hour Podcast for jumping on early on. For Coach Nick White and Matt Skinner, have a great week, everybody.